The story I was telling you about, and that I hope will get more attention, is a report that is out from the Institute of Marriage and the Family Canada that says our declining fertility rate is a serious concern because we have a below replacement fertility rate and an aging society. And here to talk about it, Peter John Mitchell, senior researcher at the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
What does that mean, below replacement fertility in an aging society?
Well, replacement fertility is the number of children that a woman would have over the lifespan that would basically replace current current population, which is at, that rate needs to be about 2.1, and we're sitting in Canada around 1.66. So we're well below replacement fertility. And as you mentioned, our society is also aging. So we have a bubble of older Canadians moving into retirement years. Obviously, the baby boom is getting older, and we're not having enough children to replace them. And that has implications in a lot of areas of life, particularly economics as well.
Well, Stats Canada says within the decade, we're not talking 20, 30, 40 years from now. Within this decade, there will be more Canadians 65 years of age and older than there are Canadians 15 years of age or younger. That's the first time in the history of the country. And you say, don't count on immigration to help with that.
Yeah, immigration certainly is one of the strategies that government uses. In Canada, we're in a pretty good position in terms of being able to attract skilled workers, but that's not going to be enough to fill that gap. And particularly, immigration doesn't actually help in terms of an aging society. And we've seen models in the last few years where if you even take out those who have immigrated to Canada, it doesn't really change the average age of the society. So we still have this problem of an aging society.
So I guess we have to encourage more parents who have one child to have two or three, and those who have two to have another. But are we in the modern Canadian society set up to do that? Is it too challenging for, or at least do many parents regard it as too challenging to have more than one or two children?
Well, I think there's a lot of factors that are challenging that. For instance, even just over the last 100 years, obviously we're urbanized, so we're children were once considered an asset, particularly in the farm and that kind of thing, and now it's more of an expense. So I think parents are feeling the expense, but also just the nature of our labor force has changed as well. More and more people are pursuing education and in school for longer, getting starting families later, and that gap of fertility. When you start late, there's less time to have more babies. And so that certainly affects the amount of children that we have. And certainly, I think there is something in our culture as well that has turned parenting from something that we would all share in or something that we would do into it's something that's almost specialized. You have to buy the books. You have to listen to the experts, watch the shows to figure out how do we do this mysterious thing called parenting.
But, it's not portrayed as rewarding. I think you use this example in your report, that it's understood that government has a role in promoting fitness, good diet, avoiding being obese, all the rest of that stuff, and government willingly jumps into promoting that, but that you don't see government willingly, or even the corporate world in terms of its advertising campaigns, jumping into promoting family.
Exactly. And I think that that's one area that could be expanded, for instance, is promoting family and promoting the healthy family and talking about the benefits. And that's not just false to government. Actually, the private sector has a large interest in that. Many private sector sectors and businesses depend largely on families for consumers. And also down the road, when those children grow up, we want to have people that are healthy, productive workers. And anybody that's had a small business knows how hard it is to recruit, train, and keep good employees. And in a shrinking workforce, that's going to be a greater challenge, particularly, I think, for smaller businesses.
I wonder how much it is going to come in the form of creating this positive image of a child who has siblings, you know, who that you explain to families, especially those who've said, okay, let's have some children. If you somehow subliminally or otherwise say, you know, there's a benefit to your child or your two children having some other siblings later in their life, whether, you know, we have to start getting that message out there to increase the size of families for those who've decided they are going to have children.
Yeah, I think that's one thing for sure. And the flip side of that as well is even just parents thinking about their children in the future as well and preparing for the future. Obviously, with an aging population and with the shrinking fertility rate, it's going to put a big squeeze on our social programs and our social safety net. And I like to think that family is the original social safety net and that family's there to care for you. And that's often the first person that you turn to is your family, not to government. So when we're thinking ahead and into the future and about a retirement, is think about how family's going to support that, because some of the things that we're depending on even today might not be as robust. Those social programs certainly probably will not be as robust as perhaps they are today.
You talk about, in the modern context, recognizing that women in particular have a diverse set of options ahead of them and that there are often impediments, it seems, to having more children, that it seems more heavily weighted in favor of having fewer, that government policy in many cases could be changed to broaden the diversity of options to women.
Yeah, certainly giving families and giving women more choice about it's the type of balance they want between employment and family as well. And public policy tends to really limit the choices and whether that's for like a nationalized daycare or whatever. But we want to kind of promote options that allow people more choice. One option would be income splitting. That's something that the current government has talked about. But allowing parents to keep more money in their pockets allows them to make decisions about employment situations and about their family life and how they want to balance that.
You look at an example in Sweden, for example, and has that government policy to give people the opportunity in an economically equalized setting where whether you work or stay at home, you basically are going to see your net family income remain stable. So it's financial incentives if you do decide that you want to stay home and raise a larger family. Is there any evidence that it's increasing their fertility rate?
Sweden's a very interesting case because they do have very robust social programs for particularly for parents, generous leave programs, that type of thing. But what's happened in terms of their fertility rate is they've instituted these programs and they've been able to tease out a little more fertility. So they've seen a growth in fertility, but then it becomes very expensive to try to support these programs. So they have to cut back the programs. And so then the fertility rate sort of dips down. And if you look at their fertility through sort of the 80s into the 90s, it sort of spikes and then comes back down. Then it kind of goes up depending on how much money that they can devote to these programs as well. So it's interesting. Sweden's an interesting case for family just across the board. Certainly they have a lot of women in employment have really looked for quality, but a lot of those jobs have actually been in the public sector and they actually have a very small private sector and comparatively very few women in the private sector.
And so just making economic policy, government taxation and economic policy, equalizing it for those who choose not to follow a career or delay a career or interrupt a career isn't enough. It takes more than that to change the society's attitudes towards family and children in particular.
Yeah, I like to think that it's not just government that's involved. Certainly government is a big part of it. I guess in a limited way, I think there's things that government can do to encourage children. And we've seen examples around the world where government oversteps and it's a disaster. You think of China's one child policy, and certainly I think government has a limited role, but there's also rules for our community groups. There's certainly a rule for the private sector as well to think about, like, how do we create, for instance, how does a business create a sort of an atmosphere that allows people to come balance their families and be productive workers? And there's actually been a lot of evidence to suggest that when men get married and have children, they actually become more productive. They actually tend to put in a little more time, tend to be more productive. And sort of that idea of like supporting the family, I guess they sort of step up to the responsibility. And we kind of joke about it. We joke about it. But I can remember even a couple of years ago, Brian Murray, the GM for the Sens, talking about the difference when players get married and how they seem to settle down a little bit on the ice. And I don't know, that's just a casual, obviously just a casual observation. But there is some kind of truth to that as well, that family life does kind of change the way that we work. And I think if we can respect that, it will actually be better for business in the end.
And you're saying, you know, on a practical level, universities, colleges, you're going to have to recognize that a young woman wants to have an education, especially if she intends one day to re-enter the workforce. You better have a daycare program there at the university.
Well, it's particularly difficult, too, also for people that are entering and leaving degree programs. Often there's like a set amount of time that degree has to be completed within, and it can be difficult leaving and then coming back as an older student and kind of balancing that. So there's probably some ways that universities and colleges can think about how they can kind of cater to the family and the family development as people try to balance education and family.
Well, congratulations on at least trying to get this discussion started to the Institute of the Family in Canada. And I hope that the word marriage remains part of your title. It's called the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada. One day we'll explore with you the benefits of promoting the idea of marriage. Among other things, you have found that for those families that say, okay, we're going to be common law, there's likelihood that the children will suffer from that relationship. But that takes us down a whole different road, and I'll leave that for another day. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me on.